Welcome to Project I Am with Dr. David Schloss. Grab your coffee, green tea, or smoothie. Find your favorite listening spot or put on your walking shoes. Ready? Let's go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Project I Am. I'm Dr. David Schloss. And today we're going to sit with the quiet, luminous word, belonging. Not as a task or a technique, but rather as a way of seeing, as a way of being seen. Today we'll let the Irish poet-philosopher John O'Donoghue and the gentle priest-writer Henri Nouwen keep us company. We'll weave their wisdom with what our world is living through right now. This strange, tender, modern ache for connection. And we'll do it at a slow pace that lets the soul catch up. So, take a deep breath. Let your shoulders drop. If you're walking, find your rhythm. If you're seated, feel the chair cradle your weight. And if your mind is scattered, that's okay. Belonging doesn't ask us to be tidy. It only asks that we are here, that we are present. But before we begin, here's the disclaimer. I'll be right back.
This podcast is created for educational and inspirational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional mental health services, diagnosis, or treatment. Although Dr. Schloss is a licensed mental health professional, listening to this podcast does not create a therapeutic relationship. The content shared here is intended to support your personal development and mental wellness journey, but it should not be considered medical or psychological advice tailored to your individual situation. If you are in need of therapeutic support, please seek help from a qualified mental health provider in your area. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact a local crisis line or emergency services immediately. Views expressed by any guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily reflect views of Dr. Schloss or the views of Project I Am.
John O'Donoghue once wrote, "No one else has access to the world you carry within you." And I really like that line. It's short, but it moves like wild light through the hallways of the heart. If no one else has access to that world, then the first home of belonging is interior, the room we make for our own soul. Henri Nouwen adds a second beam of light. He says, "You are not what you do. You are the beloved." That's not a slogan, it's a name. A name quietly spoken over us again and again, especially when our hands are empty and our plans unravel. Between O'Donoghue's inner world and Nouwen's belovedness, there is a door. One you can open from the inside. And belonging begins when we hear that knock and we choose to unlatch it. You see, we're also carrying this conversation inside a culture. We're also carrying this conversation inside a culture that is startlingly lonely. In the United States, the Surgeon General sounded the alarm not long ago. About a half of adults report measurable loneliness. The advisory framed social connection as essential to human survival, not a luxury, but as basic as clean air and water. It's sobering. It's clarifying. And the data keep humming the same notes in different ways. Large-scale analyses show that strong social relationships significantly improve our odds of survival, comparable to other well-known health behaviors. That's how bodily our belonging is. It's not just uplifting, but belonging is life-saving. And this isn't only about other people. It's also about you and me. It's about us. It's about the ways gender, work, and culture hold or thin out our connections. There was a 2025 Pew report that found that men and women in the United States report loneliness at roughly similar rates, though women tend to reach out to wider emotional networks. Now, this pattern is nuanced, but the headline is clear. Loneliness is democratic. It crosses lines. So when we talk about belonging today, we're not talking about decorating an optional room that we may seldom enter. Rather, we're talking about shoring up a foundation upon which the rest of ourself is built. Let me tell you about a story, a small short story. A few months ago, I watched an elderly woman step onto a city bus. She was wearing a dark blue scarf. A scarf that looked old and used, like it was a treasured possession of hers. And as she was stepping on the bus, she fumbled with the card reader. And the driver said to her really softly, "It's okay. Take your time." That was it. That was all he said. Short and sweet. But as she heard him, something changed. Her shoulders dropped a little, and she exhaled the way you do when you finally lower a heavy suitcase. He made space for her. There were no grand gestures, just room making. The driver widened the doorway of the ordinary, and the woman found that there was space for her there. You see, belonging in the wild out there often looks just like this. Micro moves of welcome that tilt an entire day toward mercy. Our stories right now, even in pop culture, are doing their own work of asking about belonging. There's that show, I think it's on Netflix, it's called The Bear, that high heat, high heart show about grief, kitchens, and the kind of chosen family trying to feed each other while the world frays. Critics have noted how deeply it keeps circling these themes of found family and the cost and necessity of making a table big enough for everyone's hunger. Even when the storytelling wobbles, the heartbeat of "we survive together or not at all" keeps pulsing in the show. Now then there's that other movie, Pixar's Inside Out 2. And that show nudges us, it moves us to consider anxiety and belonging in the same breath. Reviewers of the show and mental health practitioners alike observed how the film shows adolescence as a storm of new emotions, how the need to fit in can really eclipse our call to be true to ourselves. And that's a belonging question at its core. Will we bend ourselves out of shape to be included? Or can we be held and seen as we are and still be loved? These stories hold a mirror for us. They don't give us steps of what to do, but they show us how things are. And sometimes that's the holiest type of work we can do. I want to talk a bit about John O'Donohue. I love his writings. And in his writings, you'll find that he loves the word blessing. He treated it as a way of seeing the sacrament of the ordinary, the strange privilege of being here in a body, among others. He said, in essence, that we walk around with an entire inner landscape and an inner language that can open a path from the mountain soul to the world. In his work, blessing isn't a performance, but rather it's about attention. When we bless someone, it's a gaze that says, "You exist, and that is enough." And that in itself is good news. So what if we had to imagine blessing as belonging made audible. To bless someone is to whisper into someone's hunger and say, "There is room for you here." To bless someone is to become a doorway to their belonging. And then Henri Nouwen, he meanwhile kept returning to this theme of the beloved, not as an achievement, but as a birthright, not as something that you earn, but something that is inherently yours apart from your doing. In his book, Life of the Beloved, he writes in a way that feels like a hand on the shoulder. You are cherished before you earn it, before you improve, before you untangle the things that keep snagging you. There's something so satisfying about that. You are cherished before you earn it. This isn't sentimentality. This is ontological. It is a bedrock claim of what a human is. No one's voice is the kind that finds you on the far edge of the day when the room is dark and you've run out of strategies, all at a loss. And he gently reminds us that home is not always a place we locate. Sometimes home is a truth that locates us. Here's the paradox, though. The very ache of loneliness is a healthy signal. It is evidence that we are designed for connection. Contemporary research reads that ache almost like pain in the body, a signal that there is something crucial in us that needs attention. And when it goes unattended, that health toll is real. Cardiovascular risk, depression, cognitive decline, all of these carry higher odds in chronic social isolation. But the headline within the headline is hope. The truth is, connection heals. Being seen heals. Being known heals. Even modest improvements in social bonds are associated with higher, better health outcomes over time. And that healing, it's not just about statistics. Think of workplaces still figuring out life after the great unmooring. We have people that are working from home, working from the office with hybrid schedules, remote days, office days, always replaced by messaging threads. Reporters have noticed how friendships at work have thinned, how these little moments of connection, of bumping into each other at the water fountain or in the corridor, have gone away, how the casual laugh at the coffee station has become a calendar object, and how so many of us miss these moments of unscheduled kindness, of being side by side with others. And if you feel that, you're not defective. But you'll recognize the reality, the truth of our need for connection. One of my favorite images for belonging is this idea of sitting at a table. And not the Instagram version of it with a perfect lemon tart. More like the quiet table where a friend sits while the kettle stutters, where there's a scratch in the wood and an extra chair just in case someone else shows up. At a table like this, it's not about being efficient or about presenting in a way that is perfect, but it's about being present. Someone starts a story that they've told before. Someone else lets the silence stay heavy enough to hold the things that we don't yet have language for, and then, like a shy animal, laughter tiptoes in. And that's what I mean by a table set slowly. We don't hurry the bread to rise. We don't demand that the words arrive polished, with no stutters or hindrances. But they come just as they are, and as they do, we bless the fragments. we let the room say, "You're welcome as you are," as you are still becoming. We welcome you as you are, as you're still in this process of becoming. That's O'Donoghue's hum at the edge of the room. That's no one's hand steady on the back. I want to share two vignettes with you. The first vignette is of a teenager sitting in a gym after practice, scrolling on his phone, his face lit blue by the light. A teammate drops beside him and doesn't say much. Just plays with his shoelace as he bumps the teen's shoulder and says, "You good?" The question isn't a probe, it's a presence. The boy shrugs and then keeps talking. Later, he'll reflect on it and notice that what helped wasn't any advice, but it was just someone choosing to be there, choosing to notice, choosing to connect, while the room of his heart aired out. If you've seen Inside Out 2, you've felt that storm, how anxious belonging can become, how the need to fit can try to evict who you really are. Which is why that teammate's silent witness matters. It's a counter-narrative. You don't have to disappear to be invited. You don't have to isolate to be missed. Here's a second vignette. Think about two co-workers working remotely for months and then they finally meet in person. The first thing they notice is how ordinary and human the other is. How the laugh lands in the body, not the chat. They go for coffee and say very little of consequence, but that afternoon their emails are kinder. The next week's meeting ends 5 minutes early because trust has shaved off the friction. The friendship didn't fix everything, but it changed the weather, it changed the atmosphere. Today, journalists are noticing that work friendships may be fewer, but yet when we do have them, they buffer the stress of the day. Let's bring our guides into the room once more. O'Donoghue and Nowen. O'Donoghue would invite us to gaze, to look at one another with the kind of attention that blesses, not to diagnose, not to optimize, but just to bless, to say with our eyes, "I am grateful you exist." O'Donoghue believed that when we look at one another this way, beauty rises to the surface like a shy island at low tide. What about Nowen? What would he say? He would, sitting across from us, whisper the identity that steadies belonging. He would whisper, "Hey, beloved." He'd remind us that we spend so much of our strength trying to earn a place at the table that was already ours. He'd beckon us gently to come home, not back to our worst habits, but to the name that lets us lay our compulsions down, to that name, beloved. And when these two voices harmonize, belonging sounds something like this. You are a mystery. You are a miracle. You are a gift. Come. Sit down. I sometimes imagine that every human has a small city of rooms within them. There's the childhood room with crayon ghosts on the wall, the ambition room with its whiteboard maps, the grief room where the air is thick and the light enters slowly. The laughter room, and the room where you talk to the night. Belonging is not forcing all those rooms into an open plan loft. Belonging is letting them stay themselves, and then inviting safe people at the right time into these rooms that are ready for a visitor. And here's the thing, cities aren't meant to be gated. Cities are made for public squares and little bakeries and bus drivers who say, take your time. The lonelier our world becomes, the more sacramental, the more holy it feels to open up one of our rooms and say, here, come in, this is me. Would you like some tea? I want to go back to that show on Netflix, The Bear, for a moment. Because even in its messiness, it tells the truth. Kitchens are hot. Families, both blood family and chosen family, are complicated. Creativity scrapes at our soul. And yet, those characters keep showing up. They keep fighting and forgiving. And they keep building a table from splintered wood. Critics may debate the structure of a season, but almost everyone agrees that the point in this show, the point is the people. Belonging is what makes the heat of the kitchen survivable. May our lives be a little bit like that kitchen. Not perfect, but alive with the steady work of feeding and being fed, of seeing and being seen, of knowing and being known. Humans are wired for connection. When we lack it, our body reminds us that we do. Our hearts and our minds carry extra weight. When we stitch even fragile threads of friendship and community, our body knows that too. Our blood pressure settles. Our sleep deepens. We remember how to laugh with our eyes. Across age and gender, loneliness shows up across all contexts. But in the midst of all of that, belonging heals. If you've been thinking that it shouldn't matter this much, let the data absolve you. It does. Belonging matters. Your loneliness matters. Let that absolution be permission for you to not hustle, but for you to hope, for you to risk showing up, for you to risk reaching out. In the spirit of O'Donohue, I want to speak a few short blessings, not instructions, not assignments, just words that might open a small window inside of you. Notice what happens inside of you as I say each of these blessings. For the one who feels outside the circle, may the grace that holds all circles reveal your place, unearned and unrevoked. For the one carrying unsaid things, may your silence be a shore, and may the right listener arrive like low tide. For the one who is tired of pretending, may you be met where your mask slips, and may that meeting be gentle. For the one who longs for a place at a table, may the table find you, even if it's a park bench, a phone call, or a bus ride with a blue scarf and a kind voice. Henri Nouwen once suggested that spiritual maturity looks less like conquest and more like homecoming, less like climbing a ladder and more like learning to stand still in a truth, in the truth that you are already loved. That kind of belonging doesn't erase our contradictions, but it embraces them, the way a coastline hugs both cliff and cove. And John O'Donohue, walking the western edges of Ireland, might add, let beauty be your companion. Beauty not as glamour, but as the quiet dignity of existence, the sacrament of being here at all. He would remind us that behind our images and beyond our words, there is a silence that belongs to another world. And that silence is not empty. It is home. As we close, if you're able, let's take a brief, gentle moment of stillness together. Find a posture that feels both grounded and open. Bring your attention to your body and notice three things that your body is in contact with: the chair, the floor, and the fabric at your wrist. And breathe. Not to fix anything, but just to notice that your breath is keeping you company. On your next exhale, whisper out loud if you can, I am here. And if you can, as you turn your attention inwards, imagine a small table in your inner house. There is a chair for you, and there is a chair for someone else who calls you beloved. No agenda, just presence. If an image arises within you or a phrase comes to mind, let it. If not, that's okay too. Let your noticing be the prayer. And as you come back to the room, remember that there is a courage we talk about often, the courage to step up, the courage to speak out, to cross the room. All of those courages, all of those forms of courage are important and are good, but there is another kind. The courage to be held. The courage to be seen. The courage to be known. To let a friend see the room you usually keep locked. To let somebody else lean their weight against your weariness. To let beauty interrupt your doom scrolling. To slow down. To breathe. To notice. Both kinds of courage are needed. But today, if you're tired, try the second one. Let yourself be held. Let yourself be held by a memory, by a song, by a pet asleep at your feet, by a text from someone that says, hey, thinking of you. It doesn't fix everything. It doesn't fix history. But it makes being present now more possible. As we close, hold in your mind a table that's long enough for your entire life. And as you do, set at that table the child who drew on the walls, the present you who carries calendars and keys and planners, the future you who glances back at your life with kindness, and a few names of those who kept vigil with you through the dark hours. And as you all gather at this table inside of you, let them eat, let them laugh, let them cry a little. Let your belovedness be the toast. Let beauty pour the tea. And then, when you stand to leave, don't clean the table too quickly, but let the remaining crumbs testify that something beautiful, something nourishing happened there at that table. Thank you for being with me today, for sitting with me at this table as we contemplated our belonging and our belovedness. If something from this episode landed for you, if it met you in a space where there was need, pass it along to someone who needs a room with their name on it. Reach out to somebody via text, phone, or tapping them on the shoulder. Let them know that you see them, that you hear them, that they belong. This is David with Project I Am. Until next time, may you discover again and again and again and again that you already belong. May you be well.